on November. I guess we are at the 8th or the 9th. Goodness. Looks like the 9th, 2003. Stay with us.
The homeless, a problem for only one reason. Their presence raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless, our problem for only one reason. Our presence raises a question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all materialism? Who owns the land? Will someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here?
And welcome to another edition of Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. We have actually calling in immediately a caller from San Francisco who has been treated apparently not too well by the Santa Cruz Police Department. So we're going to go directly to that call, and then I'll do my usual opening patter, or pitter-patter, if you will. Hi there, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
And what's your name?
My name is Eli, but they call me the Blues Man.
You are the Blues Man.
Of Santa Cruz, and I sang this song, The Burrito Man, and I got so many fans down there. Oh. That is better than Wayne Newton in Las Vegas, and I would come to Santa Cruz and play music if I never made 1 cent. But I never asked anybody for a nickel, and the policeman gave me a ticket for panhandling.
Elijah, you are the deepest voice on Pacific Avenue. If I'm not mistaken,
you got me right, sir.
And you're the man who is about a half a block away from the Cinema 9 next to
exactly
the Rittenhouse fence, as I call
yes,
it.
Yes, sir.
And you've been around for quite a while.
I've been
around
over a year. I'm a cancer patient. I beat 8 shots of cancer. They took 5 feet of my colon out, prostate, stomach, and I raised my child by myself and got a divorce. It's been very tough. But my heart is so broken because this particular officer, I've known her, and I've been so nice to her, and everybody, I respect those officers out there. Even offered to buy coffee, not to bribe her, just because I liked her as a person, not as an officer. And it was raining. And there was an air compressor across the streets where I used to play, and I couldn't hear, so I went in the empty doorway and started to play. And the next thing I know, she was asking me for an ID and giving me a ticket for panhandling.
Wow, what time of day was this?
That was Friday.
This was just 2 days ago.
Yeah, and when I went to the police department and filed a complaint and to the DA's office, they had two detectives, like I was some kind of maniac black man, even at the DA's office, and these people had directed me to go to the basement, to the civil suit. I wanted to file a civil suit and a hate crime against this officer because they've been just treating me. Every time I get to town, within 30 minutes, I got a complaint, and you can play 1 hour. And I was playing across the street, standing in the doorway where there was nobody before they put these new stores. Nobody else worked there when I came there. you can't stand here. I went over there where the empty hole is, where you see me play now from the cinema. Had my back against the wall. They call themselves planting a three plants there. Like, you can't stand here. And you got, every time I come to town periodically, we get this complaint. But they never tell me what to complain, so I just obey with them and move. The Wyanos called me all kind of niggers and cussing me out. I got threatening letters from people. And I still, and the people there are so nice. And my whole music is to educate the world. And my program, since I've been working with education and music, teach the kids to live in peace, to settle conflict without violence, and not to be suicide bomb or terrorists and share technology. It's the only way that we can end this violence in the world is through our children and through education. But it just degraded me that I got treated like that.
So,
and I can't believe that.
Elijah.
And even when I went into the Catalyst with some friends of mine from Germany, and I accidentally sit on a car outside, and the man comes out. I go in the Catalyst the next weekend. They're going to physically throw me out of my face. And he goes over to the police officer when I'm standing outside. One of my groups is playing. I wanted to hear them sing, and I couldn't go in. And he goes, one of the bouncers goes to the Catalyst, to the police officer, and tell him. And I got the fear just standing. I'd never been interrogated so much. And by the way, I had to leave town many years ago because I am the original human statue, and I couldn't stand still. I was in jail with that trailside killer for standing still trying to be a human statue that everybody imitates.
What year was that, Elijah?
30-some years. I lived there, me and my child. I had no money. They forced me to leave Santa Cruz. I'll go to jail. They tried to frame me for being a living statue.
And this was, what year do you remember?
This was some years ago. Back, my son is 21. He was almost one and a half or two years when we left.
So that was in the 80s, huh?
Yeah, they forced me to leave town. And I was sitting in that empty tank down there with that David Carpenter, the trailside killer, for being a human statue.
How did he treat you?
He was giving everybody advice how to beat the system.
Wow. And so have you been doing any of these? Do you live up in San Francisco?
I live in San Francisco, and I travel all over. I play in the Haight-Ashbury. I play at Los Angeles. And I only been playing music since I recovered from cancer, and I was in Europe, and I got sick and almost died from colon cancer. Mm-hmm. So I'm in remission, and I got a divorce and came back home, and I raised my child by myself, and I get $758 a month Social Security disability, and I barely can survive. I drive all the way to Santa Cruz, and I've never been treated so nice from any people, and it's like Santa Cruz, it's like God has something special with the people. They love me. And I wish my fans would stand up and support me. I don't know, and I have to drive all the way back. They wouldn't tell me what the price. I got a court date on the 16th or 15th of December. For what? Singing? And she says I'm panhandling.
So what you were, now, who, do you know the name of the officer who gave you a ticket?
No, I have, I think if you call Steve, let me see. All I think I have is her badge number. I got this.
Do you remember what she looked like? Was she in light blue?
She's been out there a long time. She's got sandy red hair.
Is she in light blue?
Yes.
And was she somewhat chunky?
Yes, she's the oldest.
It sounds like Officer Pam Bechtel.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm afraid Pam has got the fastest ticket book in the West.
That's well, I'm going to pray for her.
Yeah.
And I love my fans in Santa Cruz, but all the work I've done out there.
Did she give you a warning?
No. I begged her not to give me a ticket that I would never sit in the doorway, because I thought she would give me a ticket for sitting in the empty doorway.
Now, was it raining that day, or was it
good? Yes. And there was an air compressor on the sidewalk over there making so much noise I couldn't hear. It's my bad luck. If it don't be for the air compressor, I don't get this ticket, because I wouldn't have went down there. I was at my old spot. When I go down on the corner in the evening and I play a night set, I'm right on the corner.
So it wasn't raining, but there was an air compressor.
Yes.
Right.
I couldn't hear my music, so I had to move.
Right.
And it was raining.
It was raining.
Yeah.
Because what was an air compressor doing on the sidewalk in the rain,
yeah,
I'm wondering?
Doing construction work over there by where the old Cooper House used to be in one of the buildings.
So they were working in the rain, or?
No, the compressor's sitting on the sidewalk, but they were doing something inside.
I see.
The air compressor was sitting out on the sidewalk running.
I see.
But we are allowed to play music. We have a street arts association. That's what they say in the downtown council, and we are allowed to accept tips, but I'm not asking for tips, and all those guys that have been there that's been calling me all kind of names and with cans and panhandling every day and asking people for money. And she discriminated against me, because when she chased me out against the door, I asked her, why didn't you chase this guy who dressed up in this costume and stand up on the box?
Are you talking about Margami, the accordion man?
Yeah, Margami was playing in the doorways, but she never chased him away.
Of course not. He's a fancier guy, man. He's white. So let's not forget that.
Well, I look forward to meeting you. I was going to come and see you. I have a relative who's very low sick, and I have to go away for a few days to Las Vegas because my family's coming up. And I wanted to come to your meeting, and you know, there's a guy speaking today who's running for president up there. It's a very nice candidate at the UC.
Huh.
Do you know him?
Oh, you're talking about Kucinich.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be there at 1 o'clock at College 9.
At his meeting with Barbara last week in Oakland, because I'm against the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the body bags are coming back.
You got it.
Man has to find a way to settle the conflict without violence.
Yes.
You know, and that's what we have to teach our kids. And if you got children, your moral responsibility and musicians' responsibility is to use music as an educational tool. It's an international language. And you know, since I took that approach with my music and that positive attitude with the people, my response, they've treated me so much better. And even doing that ordeal, the people came to me like in sympathy. This man came to me and gave me a $10 bill. He said, I heard you. Well, you have the most beautiful voice in the world. I can't get an agent. I can't get on Star Search. I'm 62. But I think I would win any song contest. And Celine Dion got a contract for all these millions and a new thing. Let me sing with her, and let's have my fans call in and see whose voice is the bird.
Elijah, how much would you estimate you make per trip to Santa Cruz on the average?
Oh, not much. It's not money. I don't make very much. A little gas money, but it's music. I love playing. If I was a multi-megastar, I would still rather play in Santa Cruz on the mall than to play in a concert hall.
And did you?
Yes, you have been nothing but overwhelming to me, and I will always, everything I got, I owe it to Santa Cruz, because I left L.A. many years ago, and I slept in my car, and I slept on that beach over there. I didn't even know you couldn't sleep in the woods and get a ticket, but
I found myself in Santa Cruz,
and I love Santa Cruz.
Let me ask you, Elijah, are you, you're coming to town pretty soon. I'll let people know that there is, of course, a Huff meeting. Most of my listeners know this already, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
I heard about the meeting on Wednesday night, but, I'm leaving, and I got this aunt that's almost at death.
Right.
And so I would have to take next Wednesday, a week from Wednesday,
right.
I would have to come to your meeting. And I also will probably play music there like a week from Friday or Saturday.
Well, get in touch by phone, and when we get closer to the date, Elijah, I'll mention it on the air. You're going to be out there. I don't speak for the quality of anybody's music, and everybody has different tastes.
Exactly.
But I think everyone should have the right to perform without being harassed, and I've noticed a general crackdown on musicians, poor people, homeless people outside in Santa Cruz.
I look at it this way.
Yeah.
I don't put somebody down for smoking crack. I have a drug education program. I'm here to help you, okay? Reculture and re-educate. And I'm not better than nobody else. I'm like Steinbeck wrote about these people. I feel that everyone is the same. If you got your basic needs every day and you go out and live a positive life and be nice and nice to people and be happy, that's life is all about. It's not about money. I'm not into money, and I never had much money. You know, I grew up in apartheid in Louisiana. But to be treated like I'm treated, it makes me want to quit.
I hear you.
It hurts me a lot.
Well, listen, thank you.
Okay. And
Elijah,
I'm not going to take up so much time because somebody else wants to talk. All my fans in Santa Cruz, if I'm still alive.
Elijah, let me interrupt you for a minute. Is there a place you can be reached? Do you want people to leave messages?
415-242-1764. San Francisco, you have my number. My address is 4101 Noriega Avenue.
Noriega Avenue.
Apartment number 4. Mm-hmm. 94122 zip code. I was on UCS radio live the week that Johnny Lee Hooker passed away.
Uh-huh.
And all my drug education messages got out. And that is so nice. And Santa Cruz has been so nice to me.
Well, let's hope we can secure, or you can secure, or we can all secure for everyone some basic civil rights for street performers, for people of whatever skin color,
and
whatever economic class.
Yes, yeah, so if you listen to my remix of Quincy Jones, We Are the World, we all got beautiful people, but if we all look the same, we'd be ugly. That's why we have different pigmentations, you know.
Yeah, the only thing that is ugly is somebody with a gun telling you to move on when you're trying to do some music and not bothering anybody.
Every 12 minutes, one kid die in America from a gun. I'm preaching so much about that. It makes me angry that we can't outlaw guns.
Hey, we'll preach on, and I'll talk to you more later.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Elijah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's actually Elijah and some other, and one of his supporters actually called in yesterday and asked to bring this issue forward, and I suggested that he come to the HUF meeting, which is the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting concerned with civil rights violations and laws that oppress poor and homeless people and street performers and political tablers, for that matter. Anyone who's not part of the gentrification Uber Alles campaign downtown, and that meets every Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean. This Wednesday, there's going to be a special meeting of the Street Performers Union Wednesday evening, and I believe that is at 7 o'clock at the Union Street Cafe, which is the former Java House down on Cedar and, what the heck, is it Locust Street? I think it's Locust Street. I'm not sure what the cross street is. A couple cross streets from the town clock. So you might want to make one of those two meetings, listeners, if you're out there and you want to be a part of a struggle to essentially restore and perhaps create a Santa Cruz which does have the kind of broader diversity, that does have the kind of tolerant attitude that I guess a number of us thought Santa Cruz had at one time, although to some extent that's mythological. To some extent it's not. Police were pretty heavy-handed in the 80s at the same time as there was a reputation for Santa Cruz being a free and easy place, and maybe that was because the community was more free and easy and the police were less free and easy. It's kind of a strange contradiction. Or maybe not. Maybe that's just how it is. Anyway, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Sunday's show goes till 1 o'clock. I'm going to be with you pretty much holding down the fort by my lonesome, so anybody who wants to call in, that would be great, because we can use the calls. The phone number here is, as usual, 831-427-3772, 831-427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are, of course, still operating under FCC alert, meaning that we are concerned about the shutting down of San Francisco Liberation Radio. I haven't checked to see if they've gone up again yet. Maybe one of our listeners can let us know if they have any new information on that. And indeed, if you have new information on anything on the streets, whether it's harassment of bicyclists up at UCSC, interesting article on the Indy Media website on that issue, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, about the bicyclists and supporters and some supporters of police debating the issue of kind of, what would you call it, not speed traps, but, biker traps up on campus, tickets for going through stop signs being given regularly. It's kinds of intersections where if you look a number of ways, don't see cars coming, and you're a bicyclist, you go right on through. And to me, that's always seemed pretty reasonable, though I've heard, of course, people complaining, and perhaps legitimately, that bicyclists and sometimes, you know, run into problems with pedestrians, and there's of course, DiCenzo, who has this rather critical view of bicyclists, portraying them as big-assed, snot-nosed folks. I don't usually hold with that view. I'm a car driver myself, but I have a bicycle. I'm ready to go as soon as I get it together, which may be any time in the next 10 years. So we can talk about any of these subjects. You can give me new information on these subjects, because that's really what this station is about, exchanging information, at least for my show. I'd love to get information out there. Last Thursday, we had a report from Food Not Bombs, which Chrissy and Chris reported police stopping a bicycle cart, which did indeed go through a stop sign, apparently, at Cathcart and Pacific, but because of a mechanical problem. At least that was her claim. And Baker didn't want to warn her, didn't want to hear it, apparently, according to her report, and instead insisted on a confrontation, which led to her being taken away in handcuffs, held in the police station, now facing misdemeanor charges because she gave a different name, which some will say, well, what do you expect? You give a different name to the police, you're going to get hassled. I don't know what name she gave. Her report is that she gave a different name. And but of course, it's not illegal to give a different name if you're not trying to avoid justice. And you know, you can choose a new name on the spot, provided you show up in court for that under that particular name, and unless you're trying to avoid a warrant or something. So. Baker has a rather lengthy history of abusive police behavior stemming from harassment of homeless people in the early 90s, late 80s, public and notorious accusations of harassing women while searching them in 1990 and 91. 92, it actually, City Council subcommittee was formed because of massive demand by the public that it be formed. And Dick Wilson had it sabotaged and essentially dispersed. And Baker got a clean bill of health from, I guess it was the DA's office, the IA, and it was either the state attorney general or the grand jury, which means a lot to some people and not spit to others, depending on who you talk to. If you want to believe that 10 women lied about Baker, you can. I don't happen to believe that. I actually know Sergeant Baker in terms of we are, what would you call us? We're antagonists, certainly, at different occasions. We attend the same council meetings. We've chatted many times about different things. And he's, well, I've turned out flyers simply about Sergeant Baker and his what I perceive to be his misconduct, both in my case and the cases of many other people. And this is, looks like just another example of this. And he's been kept on the mall on this beat for years. He's the sergeant, one of the sergeants who masterminds the mall and allows people like Pam Bechtel to run around giving tickets to people like musician Elijah, even though she obviously has a problem. I mean, if she believes her function in life is to give tickets, as she in essence has admitted to, even to merchants, several merchants, well, I think two merchants have spoken to me about this, and I've heard her say it herself, that she really feels she's doing, she doesn't really feel happy unless she's giving out tickets, because she's got to do her job. And of course, that's not the job of a police officer. Police officer's job is not to give out tickets. Police officer's job is to be, is to have their very presence be a kind of calming influence. They should be a resource for people in trouble. And that happens, I don't know how frequently that happens. Unfortunately, given the kind of laws and upper direction from the upper management of the police department that has been going on for the last few years, you don't get a lot of that. We get people who are big defenders of the police, some of my friends and co-workers and people I call activists, like Richard Quigley, who speaks on KSCO every Thursday at 12:15 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, if you're interested. KSCO is at 1080 a.m., usually a pretty crappy station in some in many respects because I think of the right-wing drivel they pour out, but they've got some your occasional commentator that I have some respect for, and Richard Quigley is one of them. Richard is a police... a great defender of police departments and police officers and deputies, but he's also a great critic of abuses in the police department. I think that's really commendable. I try to do the same thing. If you have any concerns or complaints about how you've been treated by police, hosts, businesses, or just commentary to make on, maybe you want to commend them for their good work, as the Sentinel regularly does, and Baker ended up being commended for his good work and then appointed... declared Officer of the Year by the Police Officers Association and then finally promoted to Sergeant. So I'm sure there are those who would say he's doing a fine job, and if you don't believe that, just check his record in terms of how the other, well, at least his, the higher-ups in the police department regard him. Of course, we've got no access to those kinds of personnel records now, do we? They're all confidential, and now with the death of the Citizens Police Review Board, they're in the hands of a twice-a-month auditor who comes running in and out. Actually, he hasn't even got access to them except for specific investigations. So it's all secrets, all done behind closed doors, closed society. And I guess our new police chief, I haven't spoken to him. I'm told it's Police Chief Skerry. Yes, he's a scary guy. S-K-E-R-R-Y. It's a new chief of police, I'm told. Please correct me if I'm giving out misinformation. That's what I got from the very same Richard Quigley. And while I'm talking about Quigley, let's see, I want to make sure that I finished up the point here about, there are several meetings happening, as I've mentioned before, this week, and two of them are, of course, the Huff meeting, which I've already mentioned, and the Street Performers Union meeting, which is the first meeting of that union in some time, and that will be happening, as I did mention before, at 7 o'clock at the Union Street Cafe or the Java House. You don't have to be... I think I would say if you're a sympathizer in terms of street performers, you're welcome to come. At least as far as I'm concerned, you are. And I know that Tom Noddy was no longer in town at the time, but whose example this summer in successfully combating the no juggling rule downtown, his opinion was always his opinion that these meetings should be open. And I am the same opinion, assuming that, you know, people are respectful of the business of the meeting, which I think is to secure people's rights, establish... kind of maybe codes of conduct, if that's what we're looking for. We're not sure exactly what's on the agenda. I'm one of the street performers. My performances essentially are verbal performances. I engage in kind of street theater on occasion, mainly designed for educational purposes, to encourage the police to behave better and encourage the public to press them to behave better and to press politicians who make rules that are really absurd and that give the police either too much power or the wrong kind of direction and the wrong kind of power to pay some attention to what's going on, and maybe to kick those folks out, because that's really, unfortunately, the last and best recourse. Well, probably an even better recourse is to fundamentally change this entire system. But short of that, I would encourage you to get rid of people like Rotkin. Kennedy will be our new mayor. Rotkin's going to be on the air next week, by the way. I remind you, during this time slot, a week from today, November 16th, we have council member emeritus Mike Rotkin coming on the air. We're going to be talking about a variety of things. I believe we're going to have Steve Argue, Joe Williams, both of them. Are they both now congressional candidates? I'm hearing different things. I know that Steve entered the race, and I thought he'd left the race. Now he may be back in the race. I'm not sure. Maybe Steve can call in if he's listening and give us an update on whether he's running for the Sam Farr seat. Anyway, he's going to be one of, he's agreed to be one of the interrogators of Mike Rotkin. Hopefully we'll get Roxanne Akista-Pache to come in, too. Roxanne is, I think, supremely well qualified to deal with Rotkin. She's she may be a little bashful on the issue because she feels she did get a big chunk of time a couple weeks ago when Rotkin unexpectedly canceled out. But I think her willingness to cut straight through to the heart of things is really very important, and she's her tendency to, what is it, not take any shit, or not fool around with the niceties of things, I find very refreshing, and I think is really something that, who knows, might be able to pin down the Rotkin beast, so to speak. So anyway, come on into the studio with your radio, with your, or with your computer. We also broadcast on www.freakradio.org. That's the website. You can catch us streaming, I'm hoping. I've heard mixed reports, but I guess at least some people can catch us there, www.freakradio.org. We also broadcast at 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, and the call-in number to the studio is 427-3772. Stay with us.
Land. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? 'Cause I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Corporation. Maybe the earth owns its own self. Maybe it's the Native America.
The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question. Who owns the
land?
The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question. Who owns the
land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
Here's a man leaning on his bicycle, probably blocking traffic. Your name, sir?
Oh, it's Ray. Yeah, I'm blocking the sidewalk traffic here.
Well, it's a pretty mellow afternoon. But one thing I notice is, although I see one panhandler up there with a cup at what used to be Jason Pascal's fortune reading box, I don't see anybody with signs across the street, you know, such as visions of a cheeseburger, you know, that sort of thing. Have these people been driven away?
Yeah, I think actually they got the free food, they got the food not bombs, and they're probably cut off to find a place to sleep or something. I don't know, but there was a lot of people here earlier. Yeah.
Has there been much hassling today? I've heard that things have been pretty mellow.
Well, I did see him arrest an elderly lady. She looked to be about 61, 62, a little bit intoxicated, maybe drug use, who knows. But they handcuffed her and dumped her on the ground and dragged her in the police car, took three officers with rubber gloves to manhandle her and her into the car.
Did she have any comments on this?
Fuck you! That was about it.
Where did this happen?
Like right down here.
According to the Palomar Inn?
Actually right in front of your place, right there, you know, the trading company.
Pacific Trading Company, my favorite store.
Making it safe for the good white folks of the community. But I got an answer for the lady's question, why they give out so many tickets. I mean, they give out so many tickets so we can have this fine police protection that we have. It costs a lot of money, and all those uniforms and guns and, you know, grenade launchers that they have and all those cars cost a lot of money, so they got to give out a lot of tickets to pay for that shit.
Well, that may be true, but you're giving out tickets to poor people who can't really pay it back. I guess maybe the merchants are grateful and slip gratuities. That probably is unlikely. Maybe they'll get grants from the government to get rid of these questionable individuals.
I think it's all about the grants from the government. As long as they can show that they're actually trying to do something, then, you know, the government will give them the big kick down. Not that the government has any money.
Heard anything more? No.
How are you doing, Robert? I didn't make the meeting this morning. I was up and I was there, but they told me that there wasn't any meeting. And
really?
Yeah.
What time did you show up?
I was there at 8:15.
And you walked up to the Downtown Association headquarters,
second floor, and I was met by a woman there, and again, 50-some-odd, blonde with gray. And she told me, no, there's no meeting here. We don't have a meeting here like that. And, you know, the only meeting that we have was some sort of, you know, zoning thing.
Downtown Association, well, it's possible that the Downtown Association head, Keith Holtaway, was mistaken when he told me that there was a meeting of the Downtown Management Corporation, the group running the hosts. I appreciate your going. I find it, I don't know, I'll check into it, but I find that interesting. Well, people can make mistakes. We'll see what happens.
Well, I asked her if it wasn't today, then when was it going to be? And I heard that it was a meeting of the downtown hosts and the CSOs, and that they were going to talk about the ordinances and clarify things, and that it was open to the public. And she basically looked at me like I was crazy and knew of no such thing.
The meeting was not necessarily about that subject, but it was a public, well, because all their meetings are open to the public because they get public money from the government, and they have a city council member sitting on their board, the Downtown Management Corporation, certainly, and possibly the Downtown Association as well. So, did you get this woman's name?
Oh, no, I just talked to her for a little bit, looked around, it didn't seem like anything was going on, but then there was just closed doors, so I don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
You went to the last office
on
the second floor, next across from the Coffee Roasting Company, next to Paper Vision.
So there you go.
Yes, the Downtown Association. Well, you know, I would suggest you go back and get her name and say, look, I know the Downtown Management Corporation meets once a month. I want to know when the next meeting is. I want to know when I want to see the minutes from the last meeting. I'd like an agenda for the next meeting.
Yeah, maybe if I got nothing else better to do, I could have some fun with that.
You happen to walk by and you think of it. So, Ray, I've been a little concerned. I don't see any musicians down here at all, and I didn't when I came down here the other day, but you say there were some guitarists earlier?
Yeah, actually, today, earlier this morning, I counted four individuals playing guitars here and there. And, you know, they were also playing in illegal locations, which I thought was really cool. But, you know, they've gone home, I guess. So here's a guy right now playing guitar, and there's another guy playing guitar, so.
See, that's true. We're up here by the Irish pub. The man is illegally playing guitar on a bench, sitting on public property, brazenly. And you said there was more music last weekend. It's a Monday today, so over the Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, actually, you know, they had the the Cabrillo Music Festival and Art Festival and all that kind of stuff. So there's actually a lot of music in town, and I saw a lot of people from the festival that were warming up in different, you know, different locales downtown, you know, just singing for the public and whatnot. So that was kind of cool. And once again, you know, depending on who you are, those people weren't hassled by the cops at all.
Right, but of course they were on that side street. What about here on Pacific Avenue?
Well, just the ordinary folks, usual suspects.
Well, here's a man with a criminal dog on the mall. Now, just what is going on here in front of the New Leaf Market?
You know, I've been seeing a lot of dogs on the mall lately. Actually, a while ago...
Luckily, here's an attorney to defend this man with a dog on the mall.
Yes.
Actually, probably not. I've never heard of him defending an infraction in his life. That's Sean Gallagher. But maybe he has. I don't wish to be too cruel to the man.
Yeah, you know, he's shopping at New Leaf. Who knows? He's probably got a deal going with them.
Where's my hug? We're talking to a crowd control woman for the 49ers. Your name, Adam?
Yeah, I just say hi. My name's Rhea. I go, step over here, please.
Now, where do you do this job? Up in San Francisco?
Yeah, 3 Con Park.
Huh. So you get to watch the games?
Yeah.
And you can also issue citizen's arrest for people with dogs on the mall. We have a dog in the mall.
Yeah.
Pretty shocking.
Yeah, I know. Criminal dogs.
Yeah.
I have one.
Well, arrest that man.
Dog on the mall.
Dog on the mall. Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
dog. Should I support your scoff law?
Me too.
And to clarify, that's a tape from August. That's an older tape. So it doesn't really reflect the November situation, although you heard this morning Elijah call in and talk about harassment for his own Basso Profundo on the mall about the burrito. Now, I didn't want to tell him this because I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I've never found his music terribly wonderful. But as I did tell him, I felt that he has a right to be able to sing. And I find that... I don't know. I think the entire... temper of the mall has been changed, and I've really discussed this at such length for those of you who are the devoted regular listeners or bored to tears everywhere else, so they tune in here in desperation listeners, and I need to go into it at greater length at the moment. But I think it's good when people stand up about this kind of stuff. Again, about the downtown hosts and the downtown association, you heard of the man who identified himself as Ray, who was checking out the Downtown Management Corporation, which is the group that runs the hosts, and they meet in, they're sort of a very similar, closely linked group to the Downtown Association. So they have the mayor and the vice mayor on their board of directors, and like the Downtown Association, their meetings are open to the public. And indeed, Huff did attend, a Huff member, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom member, did attend the Downtown Association's last meeting on Wednesday of their social and legislative committee to get some sort of insight into what was going on with the attack on Food Not Bombs, see if they had anything to do with it. And apparently Food Not Bombs, the name Food Not Bombs, did not come up. Now, whether that's because stout-hearted Laura Tucker, who was in the meeting, identified herself as a Huff member or a homeless advocate, and they were kind of playing a warrior game, I doubt it. I think they probably would have at least referred to it. And apparently they did mention that Pastor Dennis Adams was no longer on the mall, and therefore it was no longer a problem. He's the guy who used to give the Sunday meals, and apparently has decided voluntarily, partially because of harassment from police and the potential for harassment from, from the merchants and the surrounding gentrification gang that's pushing this, you know, which is, you know, colluding with the Pacific Trading Company and destroying seating space in front of the Pacific Trading Company near Jackson Shoes by moving that fence 4 inches at a cost of what, $7,000 to $12,000. Removing benches, as they recently did at the done it for the last few years, but they've taken they're repositioning benches so people cannot have sort of friendly group gatherings where they used to in front of Borders in the same way. And now they put in what appears to be, and what I'm told is, that an ATM machine strategically placed in front of Borders, about, who knows, 50 feet from the corner, and there's a law that says you can't sit down within 50 feet of an ATM machine. It's not just panhandle, but even sit down. Outrageous intrusions on the public space for the benefit of financial institutions. It's actually, of course, a disguised way of engaging in behavior control and giving police license to go after people who are using the streets for social purposes that don't involve money. because, you know, you can always go sit down in the sidewalk cafe if you want to spend $3 for a cafe latte, you know, that's something you can always do. And we want the right kind of people doing that, and that's, of course, what this is all about. It's not about bad behavior downtown. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. And I know that there are people who have some concerns about bad behavior, but that is most often used as the wedge to simply gentrify the scene, and that's what's been going on downtown. So we have an ATM in front of Borders, and we have another ATM out in front of Tampico's, if you know where that is, across the street from Zachary's, about three blocks up, right next to the Metro. That's another sudden bar in 50 feet in each direction from people sitting. So the destruction of public space continues unabated. There are, of course, some of us who continue our lonely, quixotic struggles. I still have a lawsuit in federal court against Sergeant Baker, the city, and Matisse Selman of Sushi Now for their illegal and unconstitutional false arrest of me for tabling when I was trying to retain the area in front of the New Leaf Market as public area, the area that is now fenced in and is controlled by two businesses, Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino. Of course, I pointed out that those of us who were boycotting Sushi Now, the former business that was in the place where Alfresco's is now in front of New Leaf, and Alibaba's Cafe, which was formerly, which is what Cafe Campesino used to be, or I should say that was the building where it was. We were boycotting those businesses because they were the strong partners in this destruction of public space, essentially to criminalize and move along a group of people that the city council and the redevelopment agency decided weren't a good group of people to have there without a public vote. Actually, that one did have a public vote very briefly. And then 4 days, they decided to spend lots of money, set up a fence, and eliminate one of the four seatable planters in town in front of the New Leaf Market. Now, I want to say that Alfresco's and apparently Cafe Campesino have both agreed that if the public wants to use that area to sit in their tables at their chairs on the planter, they're not going to hassle people. And for that reason, I called off my... I urge people no longer to boycott those places until we hear that there's a change in that policy. But I do not like the idea of the whole space being privatized the way it is. No additional public space has been opened up to make up for the space that's been taken away. And in fact, the city council and its bosses in the redevelopment agency and the city manager's office, and I think that city council really does have bosses, or those who fundamentally influence them so that they act as their bosses, have removed further public space. And that, of course, now is Borders, where you cannot sit in front of Borders now because there's going to be illegal. And if you try and sit on benches, you have to make sure you sit in benches that are isolated from each other and have been moved with no public hearing or discussion. So it is all a kind of infernal machine that's happening. But hey, I say you're only alive once. Can't say you're only young once anymore. At least I can't. I guess I can, but it wouldn't apply to me. So I say fight it while you can. And that's one of the things Huff does, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We encourage people to stand up for a Santa Cruz that's inclusive for everyone and that gets rid of these huge police budgets and expenditures, and it's all kind of linked up nationally. If you look at the Patriot Act, you look at the massive militarization, the occupation of Iraq, you look at the prison mentality, it all kind of links together very nicely, except, of course, that the ACLU, which is growing by leaps and bounds, doesn't seem terribly interested in anything local, and the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, which meets every month up in Felton, couldn't give a shit about the way people are treated in Santa Cruz under laws that if they came from the federal government, they'd be screaming and screaming. Or we would hope they'd be screaming and screaming. And, of course, the excuse for this, according to the head of that Bill of Rights Defense Committee, John Gibson, is that, oh, well, we want to focus our issue on the Patriot Act. We cannot divert our energies and deal with local ordinances and local laws. And, of course, to simply pass a resolution is not much of a diversion of energy, and it was done three times, but each time he turned it back, and the fourth time he vetoed it essentially as being against the charter, dragging along the rest of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee with him. Not entirely, there are those who agreed with him at the same time, and also misrepresenting what happened on his website. If you look at his website, you'll see a false description of the history of what's happened. I requested it be corrected. As of 3 or 4 days ago, it was not. I support the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's position on ending the Patriot Act. I'm glad that they are organizing against it, but I find their failure to do anything about local events is really telling and hypocritical, and I've talked about that before. Usually on Sunday morning, we have a report from Paul Mercelin Sampson, Mercelin Sampson? You have to call me Paul and tell me how to pronounce this properly. He's working with the Metro Writers Union, www.metrowritersunionibelieve.org, in case you want to get the latest update on that. He did send me an email last time on the show, and I'm going to read it now, and I apologize for not reading it then. What does he got to say here? Issue number 2 of the Writers Union newsletter should be ready this weekend. That's this weekend is now, after the Spanish version is proofread. The big push is for volunteers to help hand out the newsletter to write new articles to translate from English to Spanish and vice versa. Hope to get the original Spanish language material for issue 3, and then to get involved. Articles about joining the Writers Union, about forthcoming transit improvements between Santa Cruz, San Jose, and San Francisco, and about our recent First Amendment victory. The lead story will be a shocking surprise. The practical transit guide, iridethebus.org, all in small letters, all in word, iridethebus.org, is moving ahead, too. More volunteers are needed to proofread and comment on the directions to San Jose and San Francisco, and on the homepage, go to iridethebus.org and click on San Jose or San Francisco in the right-hand column. This is a draft, and the rest of the site is not complete. We especially want to hear from people who have older, less powerful computers and from people who are disabled and might use special software to access the web. Is anyone interested in helping us with the Spanish translation? Again, that's iridethebus.org. He announces he'll call in next Thursday to let people know about the next Metro Board meeting, and as always, he thanks us for lending an ear and hopes we're having a good week. That's Paul, and he's a Metro Writers Union, www.metrowritersunion.org. So check it out. And that's Paul Marcelin Sampson. So there. Well, I'm actually glad that I'm not really glad that the speaker you heard in that last taped segment about 5 or 10 minutes ago tried to go to the Downtown Management Corporation, which runs the hosts, which meets once every month or once every other month, was unable to do so because he was apparently sent to the wrong meeting, or he was told there was no such meeting. Could have been an innocent mistake, but generally speaking, those meetings are open, and we're going to be. If you want more information about how to keep an eye on what the real maestros of the downtown, or I should say masters rather than maestros, are doing, you should contact the, go to the Huff website at www.huffsantacruz.org. There's a lot of resources there. I don't know that we have a lot actually on the Downtown Association as of yet. A lot of our stuff gets posted there, and we also have a blog, which I've never known what that meant until I began to enter into computer land, but it's a way for people to write their thoughts down from distant places and send them to Huff. And so if you're in a library in Des Moines, Iowa, and you're seeing police harassment, you can always write up something, go to the Huff website and access it. Hi, I'm in Iowa. Here's what's going on. And it's a way of keeping everybody in touch and maintaining some kind of public comment back and forth, even beyond the 3-minute limit of the Santa Cruz City Council. So that's something you can do. I'm going to play a segment, another segment from August, which happened at the courthouse. You may be aware at the courthouse, when you walk into the courthouse to go to any of the indoor courts, you have to pass through a metal detector, which is usually staffed by 3 sheriffs and an additional security person. Actually, we're 2 security people and a couple of sheriffs until recently. That may have been cut back budget, or maybe we've gone from chartreuse alert to polka dot alert. I'm not sure where we're at with that one right now. But, of course, it was absurd before 9/11 to have this huge machine trying to stop weaponry from coming into the courthouse in that way. In my view, it's actually it readies people for even more intrusive behavior. It's part of this siege mentality, which has very little to do with real security in my mind. It's kind of like Israel's expanding its borders in order to be more secure and putting up fences and so forth. And the United States, I think, it's particularly inappropriate. And I want to make sure that I always want to make sure that the people who do this job, and indeed it is a job, and it's one of the jobs that bailiffs have to do, and you got to say, well, you know, go through the territory, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, to some extent, my response to that is, you choose this kind of work, then you better, I suggest you apologize for it, and really apologize for it when you do it, because you are engaging in violations of people's liberties as they go through these metal detectors. And I, you know, you don't see stats on how many guns, knives, brass knuckles, etc. were actually found, because I don't think many were. There was one incident, I guess, one attorney got, a bomb was in his office at one point, like in the early 90s or late 80s. But, you know, I don't think you're going to find that kind of stuff at a metal detector. Anybody who's going to do the preparation to do that will not be deterred by that. I suppose you might say an angry parent might bring some sort of a weapon to a child custody hearing and do it, but they can also do it outside, can't they? You know? I don't know. I mean, the massive delay pisses me off, and so I usually bring it to the attention of the sheriffs and deputies when I go through. I'm not trying to be mean to them personally, but unfortunately, because they put themselves in that position, they become essentially actors in a bigger drama, and that drama has to do with whether we want to be more of a police state or less of a police state. And so here you see a little bit of that drama happening as this metal detector situation essentially plays itself out. Yeah, you should know the background of this. The deputy in charge is a man named Larry Holtzman, who's a very nice guy. He arrested me when I was one of the Capitola 13 last spring when we opposed the Iraqi war. We were arrested for standing in front of the recruitment center in Capitola. And he was quite candid about his opinions, outspokenly against the Iraqi war, and, you know, didn't interfere with his arresting us and so forth. And, you know, I would have preferred not to be arrested, of course, but I didn't criticize his behavior or his conduct then. However, in this situation, you will see I do criticize his behavior, even though he's a nice enough guy. And usually what happens is I show up at these metal detectors with a couple of buttons on, you know, end the sleeping ban, U.S. out of Iraq, things like that. And I say, look, I've got two buttons on. Put your wand wave on me if you have to and notice that, but I'm not going to take them off. And if they make me take them off, I take off my shirt. And I'm tempted to take off my pants. I'm really pissed at this kind of stuff that they're doing, and I suggest people might consider stripping down completely, although the weather isn't really right for it, because they're engaging in public and outrageous intrusions on your right to privacy, as far as I'm concerned. So they should be made to be embarrassed about it, and there should be a cost that stops this at some level, is my view. But I say, fine, you know, he and other guards there have taken to saying, okay, well, if you only have a couple buttons on, and they do this with people with their women with their necklaces, they don't insist you take off your necklaces and so forth. Go on through. Well, some of the people are more anal than others, and some insist on, you know, on you're taking off every item of metal you might have, putting it into a little basket, and then putting it all back on again. This is something that excites my comment. Anyway, you're going to hear the whole process here. I no need talk about it no further.
All right, we're at the terrorist alert stand here at the county building. It's about 20 to 9 on August 5th, 2003. And one of the private security people is checking Becky's backpack for lethal weaponry of some kind. Could be she's trying to sneak in some anthrax. We're not sure. Now, it looks okay at this moment, but you never can tell what kind of contraband. There's a fingernail clipper. That could be pretty serious stuff. And there's some keys. Better clip those fingernails. It could be used as a lethal weapon. Yeah, he's tried to put a hold on it, but no, it's been kiboshed. Taking that back. And it's going back into the purse. I'm glad we have this kind of protective services here at the county. And let's see if we can see who we're talking to here. It's a man from the National Private Security Industries who is giving us this very thorough check of the activities.
What's your name, sir?
She's my boss.
Okay.
She cleared it, okay?
Sure. I just want to know your name, that's all. No buy about it. This is a public space. What is your name? What is your name?
I'm going to give you my name.
And you work here. We pay you a taxpayer dollar. Larry, what's the name of this employee? I'm sorry.
He's a national security. He's probably got his name tag on him.
But he doesn't. He doesn't have his name. I asked him, and he hasn't given me a name tag. I'd like to get the name, please.
I have to give you my name. I'm a peace officer. He's not a peace officer.
No, he's working here. He's employed by the county. I want to know his name because I want to file a complaint.
We can talk about it later, but right now don't make a statement.
Well, no. I want his name before I leave. I'm sorry. I need that information.
No,
if you can get it from him,
your name, Bill, or no? You want to give your name? If you didn't want to give it to you, I'm not going to make him, so that's it.
Larry, I don't want to have to file a complaint against you. This man is working for the county. He's required, if a member of the public has a concern, to give his name.
We'll find it for me and show it to me, then I'll do that, okay?
Okay, well, Larry, I'm sorry that Mr. Holtzclaw here is giving us a problem. All right, we have a man who is about, 6 feet tall, 5'11", dressed in, he has a white shirt, he has black pants, he's currently at the machine that checked the metal detector, and he is, for some reason, he doesn't want to give his name. Now, I don't know why this would be the case, because, Mr. Alvarez here has no problem. He has a name tag on. That's the sergeant in charge here at private security. And
I would think it would be just standard for them to have a name tag on.
Yeah, I would wonder, where Mr. Olson, where is his name tag? Here's a name tag here. Why doesn't he have a name tag, Larry?
He's a peace officer. He doesn't have to show
Wait a minute. He's got a name tag and he hasn't got a name tag.
He's got one.
No, he's acting in the capacity of a peace officer. He's stopping people for security. I'm sorry. Yeah.
He's not a peace officer, sir.
It doesn't matter. You're hired by the county to do this work. You're being paid with our money to check people. If there's a problem, you have an obligation to give your name. That's what I'm waiting for.
Show me that in writing, Robert, and we'll do that.
So, Larry, you're saying that your employees don't have a responsibility to identify themselves?
If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to.
He doesn't want to. He doesn't. So, if I don't want to identify myself, I don't have to.
He might have gladly told you.
I found him acting in a fashion that seemed to be somewhat harassing of
you're
one of the people.
You're acting silly right now.
I'm trying to do something worthwhile here, Larry, and as soon as I get the guy's name, I'll be happy to leave. It seems to me you're making an issue of it, why is he afraid to give his name here? I don't understand.
Not afraid.
You're not being rude.
I think if an individual is going to file a complaint, he needs to know the individual he's filing the complaint against. What is your name and who is your boss's name, per se?
Use my name and I'll tell whoever I am.
No, that's a little indirect, Larry. I want to be able to go directly to the employer about this. I'm afraid that's a legitimate request.
Last time I'm telling you, he's not going to give you his name right now. You're being rude.
I'm not being rude. I'm being straightforward. Straightforward.
I better do what you got to do.
Well, I'm doing what I got to do.
File your complaint, whatever you want to do.
I'd like to, but I don't have his name, so I can't file his complaint. So
just say the deputy Holtzclaw knows who he is, and if I need to tell it, then I'll tell it.
So yes. You are concealing. That's not sufficient for me. So, Becky, how do you feel when you went through this barrier here?
Well, I've questioned this barrier since they put it in. I know it's, $35,000 machine, x-ray machine. It has been staffed by three sheriff's deputies, and the kind of expense involved, since there's never really been an incident of someone smuggling a weapon in, and the officers have cameras all over the building, and they can certainly, they have wide discretion to search anyone who comes in the building if there's any question or they're suspicious of anything. But this is sort of a way of getting the public used to the idea of endless checks and searches and violations of our privacy and our dignity.
Wait a minute, why doesn't she have to go back and remove her jewelry? I'm sorry, individuals have been forced to remove their buttons. You are just a criminal, I can see that. That's understandable. But those of us who aren't as attractive as you get stopped by these officers. I had to take off my shirt to get through or take off a button.
In federal court, I had to take off my shoes. I had to take off my coat. Yeah, so it just depends where you're at.
It does, I guess.
And they know me. I'm an officer of the court.
Well, I would think they know me. I've been through here literally thousands of times.
Yeah, you would think so.
But you see, it's this process of accustoming people to a repressive kind of search process, I think, that is unfortunate.
These guys are pretty good.
They're nice guys. But, here's a man, for example. I had a problem with him. He wouldn't give his name. He still won't give his name. And, you got to be accountable in these public positions, I think. That's my feeling.
you know.
Yeah, they should give their names.
They should give their names. I agree. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, we'll return to this whole question of the anonymous security officers who don't give their names at the machines here, which it's interesting. And again, apparently being defended by the deputy in charge, who feels that somehow private security guards are immune from public accountability. We'll see if that's the case.
Yeah.
Mauer didn't make it today.
He didn't make it now.
Good day.
Hey, what's the name of the attorney again involved?
What is the city? You should talk to his attorney.
Right. So you're not going to be in court this morning?
We already were in court.
Oh, whoops. I missed it. Thanks, Wendy. Yeah. That was Wendy Morgan. Hey, Ben, of the city attorney's office. You didn't get back to me. I know you're a tired man, but, you know, what about my demur?
Getting out of my office.
And that's kind of devolved into chatter in the corridors of the courtroom. That's an example of trying to hold public officials accountable. And the impact of that was I never got back to Deputy or Sergeant Larry Holtzman. He's a nice guy, as I said before. Nothing against Larry. His decision's a bad one, in my view. But he's trying to be nice to the people he works with. Unfortunately, I think you got to be kind of tough love to some extent with these people and say, look, you're required. Give your name. Leave it at that. You know, any complaint that this wingnut Norris makes is going to be ignored anyway, so let's go. But he wanted to insist on the right of these people to be anonymous, not to have name tags and so forth. And actually, one of them did and one of them didn't. But the next time I came in, he had a name tag. So that's fine. It's actually not fine. It's not fine that we have to continue to go through the humiliating process of accounting for ourselves as we walk into the courthouse when it's our courthouse, supposed to be our system of justice, our deputies. In fact, it's long ago been taken out of our hands. And that's really the disgraceful scene. I'm going to try to I've got some good news on the Jerry Henry front, and I'll talk about that in a bit. Jerry Henry is the street minister who was barred from the Aptos Rancho Del Mar shopping center, coffee roasting company, the former Gottschalk store there, for years. Taken to court, arrested on a $100,000 bail twice for essentially protesting police and merchant misconduct toward youth there. Because he was informing youth as to how to assert their rights. And there's been some good news on that front, which I want to pass on. I know Richard Quigley has been talking about the issue on his Thursday KSCO show, again, which I mentioned 12:15 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm going to get you a little bit of that, updated, that is to say. But first, let's take a break.
America cannot afford another fee and no more. Not a global foreign war will sit us down from the inside. America cannot afford another global foreign war. We need to find us an enemy within our borders. The enemy is you. The enemy is me. We got the war on drugs. We're the enemy. What it means, incarcerate all the young black men. What it means, incarcerate all the Mexicans. What it means, incarcerate all the poor whites. What it means, incarcerate all the homeless. At what point does it become okay for persons to stand up and say out loud? It's racist, it's genocide, it's slavery. Cannot afford that a Vietnam war, that a prolonged foreign war will put the system down from the inside. America cannot afford that a prolonged foreign war. Thank God we got George Bush to find us an enemy within our borders. The enemy is you. The enemy is me. We got the war on drugs. We're the enemy. What it means, incarcerate all the young black men. What it means, incarcerate all the Mexicans. What it means, incarcerate all the poor whites. What it means, incarcerate all the homeless. It's all been done before in the last world war. The solution to unemployment, internment, internment, internment. My enemy, he is a fucking pig. My enemy, he lives up in the capital. My enemy, his name is Gray Davis. My enemy, his name is William Bennett. My enemy, he was gone and all bad. My enemy, he got the Mexican border. My enemy, building a prison just for me. My enemy, he throws down law and order. My enemy, it's not a heroin junkie. My enemy, it's not a speed freak. My enemy, not a skid row alcoholic. My enemy, does not sleep on the street.
Well, we got songs and we got critics. Hey there, caller. Hello? Oh, caller. Caller. I think we lost our caller there. That was a critic of that particular group. That's 15. And I think it's called My Enemy, that song. But feel free to call in. 427-3772 is the number here. You're tuned to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. My sides are still pretty broad, and I'm trying to be pretty broad-minded, this and that. On the 14th of November, that's Friday, there's going to be a trial, I believe. I'll be talking about that in a moment. Trial of Bajana Romero. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Paul Marcelin Sampson calling.
Hey, Paul. I just read your email. Did you hear that?
Yes. Actually, I didn't. I've just been tuning in and tuning out, doing other things this morning. I'm preparing to take off for a week. So, can I give a bit of an update for your
listeners?
We just released, and I assume you read this from the email, we've just released the second edition of our newsletter, and the lead story, which was not mentioned in the email because it was still confidential at that point, is about a series of cartoons that a Metro bus driver produced called Metro Blues, and that the union, the bus drivers union, UTU Local 23, decided to publish on its website. And let me read you some of the captions from these cartoons. Number one, have stroller, will travel anywhere except Planned Parenthood. The cartoon shows a pregnant woman with long hair and features that suggest that she would be Latina or African American. She has three children with her and a stroller, and they're waiting at the, and she's carrying a Kmart bag, and they're waiting at a Metro bus stop for the bus. And the caption is, again, have stroller, will travel anywhere except Planned Parenthood. Hmm. Another example.
Wait, let me pause for a second. I'm not sure if that is an anti-abortion ad or an anti-welfare stereotyping ad. What do you think? What do you think that is?
Well, let me redo the next one, and you might be able to draw some conclusions. Entitlement check plus discount bus pass equals nothing to do but ride.
Oh. Well, you know, I know that there was a musical in the early 60s called Subways Are for Sleeping.
Oh.
In which people were using the subways because they had no housing, and they use them to sleep on. Of course, that's done as much as people can in the big cities now, but I don't think people can get away with it anymore. It's a good idea. I think the buses might be interesting places for people to be able to sleep at night if they're not being used, but I'm just a wild and crazy idea of mine. Go ahead.
Next caption, a sign, a warning sign, no smoking, no stinking, no chance.
Oh, well, sounds like the complaints about homeless people in the library.
Yeah, I'm able to answer each of your points with another one of these cartoons. And then I would say, for me, the most insulting, and I mean each person, you know, will have a different opinion of this, is another warning sticker. This one is on the dashboard of a bus, and it says, warning, this vehicle contains a large quantity is misspelled, mind you, of manic depressives, and exposure is hazardous to your health.
Mm, so it got them goddamn weirdo nuts on the bus, too.
Yeah. Hmm. So this is by a Metro driver, so people know what your drivers think of you, and it was published on the web by the drivers union, UTU Local 23. I would also point out to folks that we tried to keep the story under wraps and release it on Friday, and, you know, wait as long as possible and make sure everything would be coordinated, the media would be informed. By that time, the cartoons were gone. But if you go to the Local 23 website, www.local23.org, you'll still see a link to Metro Blues on the homepage. So you can see that very recently the cartoons have been removed, and they haven't had time to remove the link from their homepage.
You're going to make a copy of that link so it can be preserved?
Oh, I have one, and our volunteers, when we get to handing the newsletter, which will probably be a week from now, because we need to get people involved and sit down and explain to them how it's done, help them answer questions for writers. It'll probably be a week from Tuesday that we start with that. People will have copies of the cartoons to show to the public. We can't reprint them because of copyright, but we can certainly show them to folks.
Well, you can reprint them for commentary purposes, I think.
Yeah, but within some limits. And I'm sure that, you know, if given the chance, the drivers would slap me personally with a copyright infringement suit, and they'd be laughing. And, of course, they have, you know, the full backing of their union. I should point out that it's the same union that is striking right now in Los Angeles and depriving very, very poor people of transportation.
You know what the issues are in Los Angeles?
The issues are the usual, you know, unreasonable pay raise kinds of demands that these unions are making, and in this case also an unreasonable demand about health care coverage. And the city of Los Angeles, or the county, has been very reasonable in what it's offering. They're upping the health care contribution by hundreds of dollars a month for every employee, and these employees are still not satisfied.
I better get a union rep in here to counter your propaganda, my son.
Well, I would welcome the chance to have the debate. So just wanted to let folks know about that. That's the lead story in our newsletter. This gives you an impression of what the people who drive you around are thinking of you. This is, you're paying them. This is how they respond.
Let me ask you a couple questions, Paul. Is this... Have you talked to any drivers inside the union as to is any driver who wants to get a cartoon on the website able to do so? Does it have to go through some kind of process? What's the deal with it?
I don't know. Union folks don't really talk to me very often. Actually, they don't even acknowledge me now when we're in the same room, so I'm not able to have that dialogue. I do know from speaking with management at Metro that there is a history to these cartoons, and they have targeted management for, I think in this case, some unreasonable things, and they also targeted seniors and the disabled, and because they used the name Metro, their cartoon wound up being one of the lead exhibits in a lawsuit that seniors and disabled people brought against the transit district. So essentially they were doing things in the name of the transit district and making everybody look bad.
Who are the officials who are responsible for the website?
I don't have a list of names here. It just says the website team, and the committee lists have not been updated on their website. But the leader of the union, I believe her title is the president, is Bonnie Moore. So I assume that, you know, somebody under her and one of the committees would be responsible for this.
I know Bonnie. I'll give her a call and see if I can get her to clarify your vicious attacks and see what kind of response she has.
Well, I imagine that the first response will be, oh, no, we never had any cartoons there. So I would urge people, go to the website today and see for yourself that the link on the homepage is still there. It'll probably be gone soon.
Maybe I can get my producer to give a call to Bonnie Moore. She ran for city council, I guess, either 2 or 4 years ago.
Oh.
This was 4 years ago, or 3 years ago now. Maybe we can get her to look into this situation, because my thought is, if somebody wants to, free speech is one thing, but an official statement of this sort is perhaps, you know, significantly different. I don't mind caricaturing management. I'm happy about that. And I believe that other people should be allowed to caricature whoever they want. I don't want to, you know, attack someone's
You get complete
right.
agreement with me on that. Complete agreement that people should be able to do caricatures. But when you get into what I would call hate literature, this is a term that's not used so much in the U.S., but for me in Canada, this was a very common term. When people write that the Holocaust never happened, and when you have folks who are saying that people who are black are inherently less intelligent than others, that's in the category of hate literature. And I don't see that as protected speech. There is an exclusion that the courts have added concerning, you know, literature that's threatening, material that's threatening. And, you know, when you're attacking, you know, in this case, I assume they're trying to attack single mothers who, you know, are poor and may be on welfare and may not be white, you know, all the usual targets, you know, that's hate literature.
Well, I know Canada has a different perspective, and they also prosecuted what's-his-name, the school teacher, for his Holocaust revisionism. What's it, Zundel?
Yes.
And I disagreed with that, so we probably are different sides of that issue. Not that I think much of his scholarship, mind you, but I believe individuals have a right to express weird views. Up to the point of inciting people to action, and then, if criminal action results, that, of course, is... obviously actionable, and presumably you could even try to stop it, although censorship is always dangerous, because the problem is it can be applied to, all kinds of different situations, and might be applied to me, who knows. So how do people get a copy of this newsletter and get these lurid cartoons?
Oh, well, we can't give out the cartoons again because of the copyright, because cartoons are a very special category in copyright, and for me to reproduce a whole cartoon, even for the purposes of criticism, is against the copyright holder's rights. There's no question about that. I can't reproduce a whole cartoon. So I've reproduced the captions in the newsletter. Right now you can go online to metrowritersunion.org. You don't need the www part at the beginning, just metrowritersunion.org. You have to register. It's a Yahoo site. They give it to us for free, so unfortunately we have to put up with that. Registration is free, and after you register, you can go to the files section, and there's a newsletter folder and then the November folder for this newsletter, and there's a Spanish version, an English version, Spanish large print, and English large print as well. And, we'll get to handing it out probably next week. And folks who are interested in helping out with that, please call 831-421-9031. Also, people who want to write for the next newsletter, we want to hear stories from you folks, the bus riders, the public. What are your impressions and concerns?
Okay, sounds good. And anything more about upcoming meetings that people should know about?
There is a Metro Board meeting on Friday, the 14th of November. I'll call in on Thursday with the address and time and all of that.
And the agenda.
Yes, yeah. I have no idea. This one will be a surprise.
Okay, then.
All right.
Sounds good. And we've been talking with Paul Marcel and Samson. Paul, thank you. And you might stay tuned. I'm going to try to get Bonnie Moore on the line to respond to this latest situation.
Okay, I'll be listening in. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. If you have any thoughts on this issue, feel free to call in. Different perspectives, questions, commentary, exclamations, strange songs, you name it. What I was saying before was that on the 14th of November, we have the trial of Bajana Romero, and that's for his participation in essentially being in a public space at Borders when the police decided to issue jaywalking tickets and essentially trying to witness for and defend the rights of a deaf man, Def Jam, who was ticketed. At least that's his account. I read the police report, or one of the police reports. There's actually a voluminous series of police reports that I only read, was able to get to one of them during the last show. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to play again a tape from, I believe it's late July, which Bajana and others describe what happened to what I call the jaywalking massacre, the crackdown of police against youth at Borders who essentially do what everybody else does, walk across Pacific Avenue. And this is a repeat. Those of you who are regular listeners will recognize this, but I think it's timely and relevant since, as I understand it, the trial, or at least the, I guess it's trial for setting on Friday, that's what they usually have, is coming up 10 o'clock in Department 1 on the 14th, Friday, that same day that the Metro Transit District is meeting at City Hall. Usually, I guess they meet at 8 or 9 o'clock. We'll be getting an update on that on Thursday evening in my show from 6 to 8 in the evening. You'll be able to hear that in case you don't know, because I don't know for sure. So here it is, Bajana Romero. What happened? How many cops does it take to harass a bunch of young people in front of Borders? And why is it only special people get jaywalking tickets on Pacific Avenue?
We're talking now with Paul Sanford. Paul, you're outside the county courthouse.
Sorry about that. That's another case. I will get this right.
We're talking with Acca. And Acca, we're here in front of Borders about 310 on a clump of individuals, I must say. You're going to court for what?
This one's for resisting arrest, I guess, is the charge that they finally told me it was all about.
And what happened that you were accused of resisting arrest?
I have to go back to the beginning, which involved me pushing a, I came to this area to push a, that night to push a friend in a wheelchair. I wanted to come here. Saw a bunch of my...
Hey, what? Don't do that, man.
Being lit on fire as I'm speaking. I came here and there's a bunch of friends sitting on the sidewalk in a circle, and there was about three police on this wall here standing. There's already something going on. I'm still not sure what it was, but a friend said come sit in our circle, and so I did.
Your friend in the wheelchair was with you?
And he was sitting on the side. He later went on, but that was the reason I came that night. The cops were inside Borders, and we decided to go on the other side of the street just to confuse them. You know, someone at that point decided to bring...
Watching for a while, and you decided to have them come out and surprisingly find you all gone?
Yeah, on the other side of the street. I guess it was a bit of creativity happening. And I was over there, and we were standing there for a while, and they came back out after like 20 minutes or so of being in Borders doing whatever they were doing, shoplifting for all I know. But they came out, and a friend of mine, Def Jam, this deaf man, he walked across the street and he got charged by one of the cops. And
jaywalking?
I was under the whole assumption that it was jaywalking. And Lakatos, Captain Wingnut, he decided to stand in front of the cop, and I was sort of standing there already.
This is Seer, what's his name? Soothsayer?
Soothsayer, yeah.
Is he still around, by the way?
Last I heard, he was arrested for being naked on Pacific. He was supposed to go to court for the same thing as me.
Jaywalking, or resisting arrest?
Resisting arrest. So what happened was Def Jam walked back, the man walked back across over here, and the cops were messing with him, and we thought it was all about jaywalking, so we decided to do a civil disobeying, and jaywalk ourselves, so we were trying to get other people to do it, and it just being... I think it just ended up being me and him. And at that point,
Did you block traffic or did you just walk across the street?
No, I did not block traffic. No. Just walked across the street, tried not to get hit by any cars. Okay. And I did that, and then I decided to keep on walking because I don't like talking with too many cops that are angry at something when it's not me. Too much blame comes in. And as I was walking, others were jaywalking.
We have another witness here, too. We'll talk to you, too, in a moment.
And so I was just walking on my way. I decided to let them just do whatever they were doing with Def Jam at that point because they got so far. And I just decided to leave the area. And at that point, I heard some inaudible words, and that the cop was saying, I think it was Officer 11th or something, is how it says on my court papers. And I didn't hear what he said. The officer said stop or something, but he came up to me and grabbed my wrist at that point and just really jerked me back, saying, no, you're coming with us. And at that point, he brought me here. And he said, sit down. I said, no, I'd rather stand. He's like, no, you're going to sit down. And so I sat on the ground. He said, no, stand up. And just the whole thing of them bending my wrist backwards and really roughing me the fuck up and just blaming me for society's problems, it appeared. And so I guess I'm arrested for resisting.
What happened then after you sat down, stood up, sat down?
They slammed me into the cop car.
And then?
And then I waited in there for a while I was a little pissed at the time and screaming something about peace, and I think Lakatos was telling everyone else to get arrested and in order to support us or something, I don't know.
Now, I understand at this point someone wrote down 13 to 15 numbers or names on his shirt, on his arm, and magic marker.
Yeah.
Does this indicate that there are actually that many police officers?
I guess so.
Seven cars. On side streets.
Yeah, that was a total of 7 cars for the jaywalking incident. 5 on Pacific and 2 stopping traffic trying to turn onto Pacific.
Your name is?
Dan Hemingway.
Dan, did you see most of the incident?
I saw several other people getting arrested. The part I saw with Spirit was when he's actually getting shoved in the car. He was screaming as they were twisting his wrists. And I noticed lots of people jaywalking back and forth at that time.
Talking about the man I'm speaking with here?
Yes.
Where was the car parked?
I believe it was right here between the
side. On the border side of the street?
It was right in the middle. There's five right in the middle of the street.
And the five squad cars blocking Pacific Avenue in front of Border.
Yes, it looked like a riot actually when you saw the police cars, but then when you saw the crowd, it was just a couple of people getting arrested and some other people upset.
We're talking about, I guess it was a Wednesday evening around 5 o'clock or so?
I don't remember the time. It was, you know, just a quick incident, you know, but the police were here fast on that one. When there was, I think, a total of 3 jaywalkers or something like that. They had more cars than jaywalkers, actually, in the beginning.
Well, that's in order to protect both motorists and pedestrians. I think you should thank those police officers.
Yeah, I kind of wondered why they were kind of straining on a gnat and swallowing a camel when they thought he was obstructing traffic, jaywalking, when they had 5 cars blocking the street to help the incident. It really seems way out of proportion.
Maybe they were just showing him how to do it properly.
Yeah, maybe they were clearing the way for all the next jaywalkers, because I did notice a bunch right while he was being put in the car.
Now we're talking with him.
And they're, Bajana. And there was a point when, you know, I was standing in front of the person they were trying to arrest. I guess it was more than just jaywalking. He had a bunch of warrants, and they thought that I was obstructing him. The thing is, they could have gone around me. I moved from side to side just barely, you know, just because I wanted to be able to be an interpreter for this deaf man and not just have them, you know, shout at a friend of mine. They could have gone around me as a deal. If I was obstructing their arrest of that person, which seems to be a big part of what was going on, and then later not want to be arrested myself, they could have gone around me. You know, it wasn't like a whole barricade of all the people around me blocking them from arresting this person. They could have gone around.
Have you seen a copy of your police report yet?
I believe so. I have all kinds of paperwork.
Were you held in jail for any length of time?
About 10 hours or so.
And who else was held with you?
Soothsayer.
Anybody else?
There was one that was brought in, but he got let out later than us.
So there were 3 of you in total were taken in for this jaywalking incident?
To my knowledge, yeah.
And was there a sergeant or lieutenant in charge of this operation?
Baker, I believe.
Sergeant Baker, fellow in shorts?
I assume so.
They wear shorts on the end of the summer.
The one that arrested me, I guess his name was Officer 11.
Yeah. Eveleth, perhaps? Tall fellow?
It's spelled 11th, but...
Tall fellow?
Tall fellow?
Like very tall.
Like his hands? I don't know.
So, then, when did you go to court?
What was it, last Monday or something?
And whose court was it?
I don't remember who it was. Superior Court,
Probably Joseph, Irwin Joseph, probably.
Judge's name, but...
And what, were you given another court date?
Yeah, this was an arraignment, basically, and,
You plead not guilty?
I plead not guilty.
And were you appointed a public defender?
I was.
Who is it?
Looks
like Anthony Robinson is your public defender. Has he talked to you yet about the case?
He talked to me at that point, yeah. And he said that they usually don't want to dismiss resisting arrest. I told him that there was some people that took some pictures of the incident and some witnesses, and he said bring them in and contact him as soon as I can find those.
When's your court date, your next court date?
25th of September.
At what time? 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock.
That'll be in Department 1. 25th of September. Yeah, I think Steve argues court date is September 11th, so it gives you a couple weeks after that. You also saw witness a lot of this incident?
Yeah.
Willing to give your name for free radio?
Yeah, TJ Ball.
And TJ, what did you see that struck you about the whole thing?
The cops tearing his arm back and him screaming, "Stop pulling on my arm." That's like the thing that brought out the... I was here right as it happened. I didn't know what was going on. They're yelling at Def Jam, it's a deaf man. They're yelling at him to stop walking. Like, I doesn't really... I'm like, he's deaf. They're like grabbing hold of him and putting him in handcuffs. Like, you're resisting arrest and jaywalking.
Where's Ryan?
Who's that? No. Yeah, that's pretty much what struck me was the fact that I've seen a friend of mine getting yelled at when he's a deaf man to turn around or you're going to jail. Stop, just cease movement, turn around, you're going to jail, he's deaf.
Do you know the officer who was doing the shouting?
I was like, I don't know, there's a lot of things. There's like 13 or 14 cops running around with like 5 or 6 cop cars here. So it was like kind of chaos. And I was looking around like, what's going on? I don't even understand.
How many people got tickets? I know 3 people were arrested. Other people get tickets who were not arrested?
Who got tickets? I didn't get one. Hey, Gabe, you got one, didn't you? You got a ticket that night, didn't you, for jailing stuff?
Oh, yeah, I got a ticket for jaywalking.
How many?
I got a ticket for littering.
So there were.
How many tickets did you figure?
5 or 6.
You have some pictures of it too.
Yeah, there's pictures that still need to be developed of Akka being hurt by the cops, and they put him in the car and a couple of other things when that happened in the early evening.
And you, of course, saw much of this.
Yeah.
And we're talking with
Jenny Watson.
Jenny, you took some photos yourself.
Gabe actually took the pictures.
Gabe, since he was an incompetent photographer, you had to do all the main work. Right?
Of course.
So, wow. Do we know the other two individuals, who they are and when their court dates are? Is that if you can, round up their court dates. Let me give you my number. I'll pass it out here. You said that it took a while for them to figure out a charge or what?
Yeah, it seemed like, first, I thought I was in for jaywalking most of the whole time. Someone said obstructing an arrest of that other man. I think that's kind of what they're going on. Then now they're saying resisting.
So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is an interview from July with Bajana Romero and a case coming up this week for...
Go ahead, we're talking with...
Bajana. And it seemed like I was guilty before they even met me. It was like I was in a certain space that was political to them, and they were standing against the walls. And they were just looking for something to pop these people with. And all I thought I was doing was protecting these kids, protecting myself and the people around me. I didn't think I was obstructing traffic or arrest.
What did you do that was protecting them? In other words, did you stand between an officer and individual and prevent an arrest?
Mostly just being with them and sitting in their circle. I don't know.
So you didn't actually attempt to block an officer from talking to someone?
I was preventing them from shouting at a deaf person because I thought there was another mode of communication, and that was mostly it. They see that as me trying to barricade them from the person they were trying to arrest, but they could have gotten around me.
Take it to a jury trial. Insist on going to trial.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know all the facts in the case, but usually they're going to try to get you to plea bargain down, probation. You'll be banned from Pacific or be a stay away order. That's their.
On November, I guess we are at the 8th or the 9th. Looks like the 9th, 2003. Stay with us.
Not only a problem, for only one reason that present raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns